Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast. I'm Chris Sissons, and my business is Market Together. I'm a local marketing coach, and I specialize in using business-related stories to market and develop your business. On this show, we talk about everything storytelling, and here is...
Hi, I'm Gemma Rosenthal, and my business is Creative Hearts. And I'm a creative life coach, singer-songwriter, actor and dancer, and I help you find your voice. On today's show, we'll explore self-love, self-worth, how words and music together tell a story, and a disastrous recipe for pancakes.
And this time, we're delighted to introduce our guest, Melissa Marie Watson, who is owner and founder of Envisioned Life Institute, LLC. She is a life purpose embodiment and trauma healing life coach and a Reiki practitioner. She's also a soon to be published author, an actress and a dancer. Welcome, Melissa.
Hello. Hello there. Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to get started talking.
Thank you for being on the show.
Yes. Well, I'm really excited because you're 6 hours behind us in the timeline and somewhere in the middle of the, I suspect, North American continent, although you could be in the middle of the South American continent. Where exactly are you, Melissa?
I'm actually in East Peoria, Illinois, just about 3 hours south of Chicago.
Aha, uh-huh, right. And what's it like there?
Oh, man. In what way? The weather? It's okay. It's a smaller, you know, city. I used to live in Chicago. That was a lot more exciting. So, and yesterday it was 80 degrees and today it's like 50. It can't make up its mind.
Right. Well, it's a bit like that here, but not as much. So if Gemma and I decided to visit your city, I've already forgotten the name. what three places would you recommend to us?
Well, you would definitely have to go to the riverfront. That's probably the best place in East Peoria. Well, it's actually in Peoria. So I'm on the other side of the river from Peoria. That's the best thing I would suggest. Catching some live music there. Uh-huh. And the other one's tough. I actually just moved here from Normal, Illinois. Mm-hmm. That's my hometown. It's about 45 minutes from here. But yeah, probably a good restaurant. There's a good like Irish restaurant down by the riverfront.
I was going to ask where you'd suggest we'd eat because that's always important.
Yeah, I always like Irish places.
So what do they serve in an Irish restaurant? Guinness, presumably.
Definitely Guinness. Yeah. Definitely different types of potatoes. I mean, they have like all the traditional things like bangers and mash and what's the one thing?
Yes.
Irish stew.
Oh, of course, Irish stew, yes.
So they do Irish music as well.
Oh, yes, they do. Yeah.
They do that sort of Irish dancing where only your legs move.
They do, yeah. Actually, the Peoria Riverfront has a huge Irish festival every year, and they have music and dancers, and it's a whole long extended weekend. It's so much fun.
That sounds like fun.
And so you've only just moved there to where you are now.
Yeah, I actually moved less than a year ago. Mm-hmm. It was so crazy. My place actually flooded, and my car flooded, and so I ended up moving into my sister's basement, but now I'm actually living with my boyfriend. So, yeah.
Yeah. And do you feel a part of the community now after a year?
I'm starting to feel like this is home. But I don't know. I work from home and I'm not super involved in the community as of yet. Like I'm mostly doing my business virtually, but I want to eventually get like an office space and do like more community outreach.
Mm-hmm. And how would that work?
Well, I do Reiki and coaching. So I was thinking of doing Reiki sessions like in person. I currently do distant Reiki. And then I think it would be really neat to do some networking in person and maybe some group coaching programs in person just to get people together.
Yeah.
And how would that benefit those people?
Well, for one, I know there is a little bit of Reiki here, and you'll hear sometimes about life coaches, but I feel like there's just not as many life coaches or Reiki practitioners in this city. So I feel like I'd be offering something that's possibly not here at all with my niche, since I work to empower women to heal from their trauma. So I feel like I could definitely offer some help there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that I'm also a Reiki, and I'm training Reiki, and I'm also a coach. So I feel like we're probably kindred souls.
That's awesome.
But I'm in Sheffield. But how do you find that the two complement each other? What do you love about Reiki, and what do you love about coaching? That's kind of three questions, really. What do you love about each one, and then how do they complement each other? That's the best way to ask it.
Okay, so for Reiki, I actually discovered it through my own healing process and kind of by accident. I discovered like energy healing on YouTube, and I was really doing it to myself. I personally have been through a lot of trauma, and I've done like the traditional therapy, and I was just looking for more ways to heal. And I think I started through meditation on YouTube, and that's how I found the energy healing. And then I found it to be really helpful. Well, I ended up getting long-term COVID. And so I used Reiki. There were days where I was doing it for like 3 or 4 hours straight because I was so sick. And I feel like it really helped me heal from COVID. And then as soon as I got better, I decided to get certified because I wanted to help other people. I actually got into Reiki before I got certified to be a life coach, but I knew I wanted to do more. So I took some life coaching certification courses, and basically I'm taking the approach of helping people shift their mindset so that they can basically create the changes they want in their life to create the life they want, because I know I was really unhappy before I made this shift. And so I'm using all the techniques that I learned to make my mindset better and make my life better. So those are the two things I like about them. The reason I decided to put them together is for the healing aspect. Anyone that's coming to heal from trauma, we can sit down and talk together, and I can guide them through exercises based on like mindset and CBT practices to help them heal. But also I can offer them the Reiki sessions to go delve deeper into healing.
I suspect that in common with many of our listeners, I haven't got a clue what Reiki is. Because somebody, this is sort of in one sentence, since you both know. It's something to do with movement, isn't it?
Should we both try and...
I know. I'll go first. It is a form of energy healing. And so we're tapping into a universal life force of energy to bring healing into the energy body. And so if you want to go I see it as this, science meeting spirituality. But you can look at it from just a scientific aspect or just a spiritual aspect. That's the way I personally view it, science meeting spirituality. So if you look into quantum physics, that sort of explains it, like quantum mechanics and non-locality. So if you like were to Google like Einstein non-locality, he's actually the one that discovered it. But it basically talks about how when two atoms come into contact and then they're separated by time and space, they're still connected and they don't really understand why. And so that theory kind of shows how as humans we're all connected, and so therefore the belief that we can, you know, touch each other through our energy and help heal each other.
I'll give you a really good example. So I hope me and my friends, I'll not say who, but a few of them are cycling together, so as in like our periods, but all of us has not started yet. So mm-hmm. It's like that's crazy, like as in how is it that two separate human beings' bodies can actually sync cycles? So that for me, and cycles with the moon as well, so women's bodies actually go with the moon, and mm-hmm. we often sync with our friends, which is what is happening right now with me. And I think that's one of the most like things that you can use to kind of prove that it's like we are all connected, because how would that even be possible if there was not some kind of other connection other than just, you know, being connected to your own physical body?
Right.
That your body can actually sync with other bodies.
Exactly. And I know you could also think about like a mother and a child and like a mother's intuition.
Yeah.
And even like if a parent's lost a child, and sometimes they wake up that in the, when it happens and like something's wrong and they just know, you know. So that kind of shows, obviously, that's a mother to child connection, which is even a closer connection. But
yeah, I had that with a friend that died. I knew before I had a dream. So it kind of, yeah, there's so many things where there is that spiritual connection that goes beyond the physical. But in Reiki, we do, I mean, do you do it where you put your hands on, like just on people in terms of just gently? Because that's how, yeah, I was taught.
Yes, so, I do. So,
yeah.
But I also have done it from a distance. Mm. I had a really interesting session with my sister. And of course, we're more bonded because we're sisters and we grew up together and we're very close. But all I did was give her a music playlist and tell her, I'm going to start in 5 minutes and I'll be done at this time. And I was working on specific things to heal for her. And at the end, she was like, at this time, I was getting these like flashbacks and it felt like I was releasing things and I was literally like pulling trauma. And at another point she was like, I was like going like this. I was actually using my body. So I was moving my, like stretching like this. And she said her back popped. And so there was just several other things she said too. It kind of spooked me out because when I first started, I thought, well, how can you do it from a distance? So you really have to get around the quantum physics and the fact that we're all connected. I used to not really know much about Reiki and was skeptical about it before I experienced it myself. And before I gave it at a distance, you know, I was still a little bit afraid to talk about it because how do you explain it? But yeah, you know, when you experience it, then you can choose to believe it or not.
I just have a horrible feeling that anything that involves quantum mechanics, you'll never get any answers to any questions.
Well, one thing I like about Reiki, they actually did a study at Harvard and the majority of people found from one session, they found improvement in their psychological and physical well-being. So regardless of the why, they do know that it does help. So it can relieve pain, nausea, depression, anxiety, stress.
In a way, it's similar to meditation but you're doing it with another person. So somebody else is actually doing it for you and with you in a way, but through also just that intention. I think it's like, to me, it's kind of obvious, and I don't know why anyone would question it, because I just think if you have somebody else wanting you to heal and they're with you and they're supporting you, well, even if it's distance, I think it just, you know, that's just love, isn't it? It's just kindness, and that energy just transmits, and it's obvious to me that would bring, you know, healing on all levels, because we're all connected, you know, there is nothing that is separate. Everything comes from the same source. And I think it gets to a point where people, you know, the skeptics of the world, it's almost like if they just allow themselves to trust in that, and it will just become obvious. It's just, I don't know, maybe that's just me being
I agree. Well, yeah, because think about it like this. We have the power to heal our own bodies, and that's actually proven. If you get a cut on your finger, what happens? Your body heals it. Mm-hmm. And it's also proven that our mental state can either make us healthier or sicker. If you're very stressed out, you're basically breeding an environment for disease. But when you're calm, your body can heal itself. So that's why a lot of people actually who have cancer, they add in Reiki alongside whatever else, chemotherapy or whatever else they're doing. So if your body can heal itself, imagine what you can do with yourself having that intention along with another person. We're such social creatures, and we're coming together to help someone heal. I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of resistance to even the idea that we have that power, just because you know, we live in a consumerist world where we have to you know, everything is fed to us that we need this, we need that, we need the other. You know, we're not powerful, and this is the idea that we have no power. But I think it's just, I think the relaxation is the, whenever I have a Reiki session or give a Reiki session, it's just like that relaxation where just allowing the mind to rest just for a little bit, and the body as well. And it's just calming.
Absolutely.
If nothing else, it's just calm. Well, it is. And then that calm obviously brings about the most likely for everything else to heal.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, shall we move on to Melissa's story, which I think will fill in more of her background and what she's doing, I gather.
Sure.
So, Melissa, it's over to you.
All right. So, yeah, I basically kind of touched on this a little bit already, but I had been through quite a bit of trauma throughout my life, and I didn't really know how to heal. I'd been to some talk therapists, and I love therapy. I still have a therapist. But, you know, I still had so much trauma that, like, hidden deep down in my body, in my soul, psychologically, in my, you know, subconscious, and my beliefs. It really affects every part of who you become. And because of that, you know, throughout my adulthood, I know I made a lot of mistakes that really just caused more trauma. It, like, becomes like a cycle. And I had depression, CPTSD, and generalized anxiety disorder. And basically, I feel like I had a lot of lack of self-love and feelings of worthlessness, and even like a lack of feeling like not being enough, and a lack of self-respect. And so I definitely didn't create like proper boundaries when I was younger, just among other people and how I let other people treat me and things like that. So yeah, so then in 2019, end of 2019, I discovered the law of attraction. And that's really what started me on this whole journey. I remember I was with my two best friends two different days on the same weekend, and I lived out of town from them. And it was a little peculiar because I was kind of telling them how stuck I felt and how I wanted to change careers, but I didn't know what to do next or what path to take. And they both said something along the lines of, if you believe in yourself, you can do it. But you have to believe it to make it happen. And it kind of reminded me, like, I'd heard of the law of attraction before, I'd like heard of The Secret, but I never got deep into it before. So I decided, I'm like, isn't that The Secret? And they were kind of like, oh, I don't know. So I decided to go home and watch The Secret. And then I actually read the book too. And I just loved the idea behind it. So the idea behind the law of attraction is that like attracts like. So whatever you spend your time focusing on, whatever you spend your time thinking about, and also just the energy and the emotion that you're vibrating is what you're going to attract. And so, you know, I was not in a great place. I was thinking about what I didn't want. I was definitely still feeling stuck and powerless. And so I was kind of in a loop of attracting that back to myself. And so very quickly, I manifested a new career. I didn't know what I wanted, so I just basically said, I want to work from home, and I want to work on my laptop. I really liked like designing things, being creative, but I didn't know what I could do without getting a new, like going back to school, you know, just from scratch, because I went to school for psychology in my undergrad, and then applied behavior analysis, which is a type of behaviorism, in my master's degree. So I already had put so much work into that, which is, can make you feel stuck, like when you want to switch. Well, I already put so much work into it. I think a lot of people run into that. So how can I change now? And but for me, it was so important to just find my true calling and to feel aligned with my higher self. And so I did get someone asking me if I wanted to do this digital marketing program, and it kind of came to me. And so I was like, yeah, that sounds like something I would want to do. And then I got a job as a digital marketer and assistant for a realtor. And so that's kind of how I opened the door to my new career field. And then in the beginning of 2020, I joined a challenge that was all about daily habits. And I actually created a vision board for that challenge. And then for the daily habits, it was all about creating self-discipline and adding self-care into your life. And so, and just creating new habits. So we were doing like exercise, gratitude practice, positive affirmations, sticking to a healthy diet, not drinking alcohol, and taking cold showers. If you've heard of Wim Hof, it's like the Wim Hof method. That was rough. And then I actually added in my own because I was so kind of obsessive and hungry for change. I was also doing yoga every day. I was meditating. I think that's around the time I discovered energy healing as well. And I was reading self-care books or self-help books and listening to podcasts. So this is like what I did with all my free time, basically. And on my vision board, I actually brought it here. I just moved and I found it. So many things in only 2.5 years have happened, or they're like in the works. And it's almost shocking to me, but it's very exciting. But yeah, also, I didn't mention this before, but because of the things I've been through and not knowing how to heal, I basically developed an undiagnosed autoimmune disorder. And so that's the other reason I got into the self-Reiki. I really want to heal from that and to shift my mindset to believe that I can. So yeah, since that time in 2020, I've manifested self-love, self-worth, and self-acceptance. And so for me, that's really the biggest thing and the most important thing. I also manifested a relationship. This was a really big block for me, pretty much my whole adulthood. Because I didn't love myself, I didn't believe in a relationship for myself. And so I would always find the wrong people. And so it's so beautiful and exciting for me that I found my boyfriend. It was on my vision board. And so, yeah, I also manifested bringing more of my passions back into my life. So that would be acting, dancing, and writing. As soon as I got better from COVID, I actually started writing some children's books, and I've been sending them out to publishers for over the past 2 years to go the traditional route with that. I started dancing again and sharing my dance videos on my Facebook page just for fun during the quarantine. And that's something I'd never done before. I was really scared at first, but then it just felt really good to get into dance again and just to put it out there and express myself and feel connected to other people. And I also started acting again. I got involved with the local theater in 2020. Obviously COVID happened and the theaters all shut down. But in December 2021, I did a big audition with Discovery Spotlight in front of a lot of agents. And I actually got signed with 2 agents, and I'm on the books with the casting director. So it's all so exciting. I mean, this is something I've wanted forever. I've been acting since 2008. You know, I moved to Chicago to try to work on my acting career. And just thinking about like the scarcity mindset that I had, I remember thinking, I think I submitted myself to 1 agent when I lived in Chicago and I got the letter that I was rejected. And I just was like, well, I can continue to audition without an agent. And I did, but obviously, you know, you really need an agent if you want to have a career as an actor. I was like doing a 1-person show at like a restaurant in Chicago, and it was like poetry and dance and all this other stuff. But someone came up to me afterwards and said, you know, I'm an agent. Here's my card. And I thought the agency name sounded kind of strange. And so I thought it's not legit, and never even called them. And since I've been connected to my new agency, I've seen this other agent, you know, on Facebook and whatnot. And I'm like, well, that was before Facebook, you know, all the businesses were on Facebook, but I'm like, wow, it just kind of illustrated that I really needed to change my mindset to really put myself out there and get there. And I think I just didn't have the confidence back then. And I definitely didn't have the confidence to do a big audition in front of a lot of agents, because that's a lot of pressure. But yeah, so then after I healed from COVID, I also decided to become a Reiki master. And I started my first business, and it was Abundant Light Reiki. And then I started my second business just a couple months later, which is Envision Life Institute, when I realized I also want to do life coaching. But now they're merged together under one. So I do both under Envision Life Institute. It's almost over, but I feel like I didn't put everything in the notes. So I just want to talk about a couple more things that I manifested, and then it'll be over. So yeah, on my vision board, I also wrote entrepreneur, and it terrified me. I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know anything about becoming an entrepreneur at the time. And it really did scare me. And I remember thinking, really, are you going to put that? And it was almost like a nudge, just put it, you know, so I did. And then when I look back, I'm like, wow, because now I am an entrepreneur. And that was only 2.5 years ago. And I also put the words empowering women. And I had no idea what that would mean at the time, or, you know, what that would turn into. But that is part of my mission now, to empower women to heal from their trauma and to empower women to shift their mindset to create the life they've always dreamed of. So yeah, I love looking back at my vision board and seeing what I've manifested and how much I've changed my life, because, man, I've come really far in 2.5 years.
Yeah. Do you think that, I love what you were saying about that you've started dancing more and that you've now got more into acting. Do you think there's a correlation between the healing work that you've been doing and then your ability to do those other things and your creativity? Because we talk a lot about creativity here on the podcast, because a lot of the people we have on are creatives. And something I'm really passionate about with Creative Hearts, which is my business, is how spirituality and creativity link together, and healing work helps you be more creative. Have you found that with your dancing and acting?
I definitely believe that through the healing process, it's made me more able to put myself out there. And also, I'm just in the flow more often. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because I'm a very creative person. Even at my worst, I was like writing poetry and, you know, acting and doing all this stuff, you know. But sometimes you're kind of, it's like having writer's block. And I write too. But in any creative form where you just feel like out of the flow, I definitely feel like I more easily can get into the flow now that I'm more healed, which is awesome. And the other aspect of that that kind of ties into it is I'm not working this salary job that's taking up all my time. That was a big part of my why. What brings me happiness and brings me more aligned with myself and makes me feel more like myself is creating. So it's like I feel like I have to be dancing or writing or acting or creating or expressing myself in some way to feel like myself and to feel happy. And I was so busy with my previous career in ABA that there was no time left to do those things. And so I just felt really detached and separated from myself. So that's a big part of what I do for myself and for other women.
Yeah. It sounds like we have so much in common in that sense of, and also with you saying about women, because I've done a lot of work with women as well, and I'm in a couple of women's anthologies. Are you also doing something like that? Because it says that you're going to become an author.
Yes. So I'm going to be in volume 2 of I'm a Fucking Entrepreneur. And it's actually written by Amanda Rose. She's another awesome coach that I've worked with a lot. And so the first volume just came out recently, a couple months ago. So volume 2 will come out in the beginning of 2023. Yeah, I'm really excited. I have a lot of projects in the works, but that's the one that is on the books to come out. So...
Yeah, I should say, I don't normally do a sort of preliminary, but for this one, the purpose of this is I'm going to when I finish telling the story, I'm going to add a little bit at the end about something that came out of a coaching session I had where I was being coached. And the purpose of this is really to show the power of coaching. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. This story is what I've, for several years now, I've worked with one of my coaches on a project that she runs where you do 21 stories in 4 weeks. So it's a story a day with weekends off, basically. And this year, I decided I would write about books that have been important in my life. So each of those 21 stories this year was about a book, or sometimes several books, and sometimes books where I'd forgotten the name of the author and the title of the book, sort of, because books sort of get into your life. So you'll see how this one's about a book as we get going. So, right, I shall begin the story now. The other day, I decided to make pancakes. No particular reason. I do like them, but I rarely make them. I sort of thought it was close to Shrove Tuesday, but it wasn't. The results tasted okay, but had the consistency of a mouse mat. I think there were two reasons for this. I use wholemeal flour, whereas refined white flour is likely to produce something lighter. Also, I didn't have the patience to beat it. You have to beat batter so that air is introduced in it, and that makes it lighter. Next time I'll use my food processor. Anyway, the point is to remind myself of the recipe I used, the Good Housekeeping Cookery Book that lives on my cellar head. It's the 1948 edition. My mother must have given it to me when I left home. I don't remember exactly when. It's huge. 848 pages. I don't remember carrying it to university. When I think about books, my father usually springs to mind. But I sometimes recall my mother and her practical skills ahead of him. A concern for me as I made my way into the world is in this book and a few other things that somehow made their way into my adult life and stayed there. For example, a few knives I remember from childhood. The book is inscribed with these words, "To Mary, hoping we shall be among the first to try the results, Mum and Dad." So this was their gift to their daughter a few years before she married, probably. The book covers everything you might conceivably want to know about cooking, just about anything available in the late 40s. How to dismember a whole rabbit, very important source of meat before myxomatosis. Yes, it includes avocado pears, under fruit, and aubergines, so that's all right. There are loads of somewhat unappetizing photos of dishes throughout, but many are fascinating and probably tasted good. And the adverts for cans of long-forgotten soup or floor polish are fascinating. Most intriguing, there's a section on whale meat. This features under a supplement of economical dishes. There are four lines on the topic. In summary, treat it like beef, but baste it more. When you think about how international cuisine has found its way into our lives over the last 50 years or so, it is interesting to see the rich variety of British cuisine back in the day. So, that's the story.
Thank you, Chris.
Any thoughts? And I'll go on and say a little bit more.
Well, after. I had pancakes today. I made some.
And were they better than mine?
Kind of broke, but it was good.
Ah, right. It's hard to make them taste horrid. They're just sometimes not quite.
Go on, Melissa.
Go on.
I make keto pancakes now because I'm on a gluten-free diet. They're still good, though. And the longer you go without regular carbs, it's like amazing. like your taste buds change.
Yes, so I should have brought the book for you to look at, but never mind. It's
well,
still
on
the summer.
You can't see it on the podcast anyway.
Yeah, but you could.
We
yeah,
could.
No, so, but I had a... when we do the 21 stories, Megan asks us to choose one of the stories, and this is the story I chose to go in depth with her. And this is a 20-minute coaching session, so... It's not very long. One of the things that came out of that, which really fascinated me, and it's hinted in this story, but I hadn't fully got hold of it, and it was Megan who helped me to pull it out, draw it out more, because she's seen a lot of my stories. And I usually, or more often, write about my father than about my mother. My father was a sheet metal worker, very intellectual. He was what they call an autodidact. You know, I mean, he was always reading. I mean, we'd all sit in front of the telly like he did in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but he was reading. He had the New Statesman, which is a political magazine, and then he read books about philosophy and politics and theology and all sorts of things. And so we were always discussing things and influenced one another in all sorts of ways. So in that sense, he's a lot easier to write about. But one of the things that I've realized is that I actually think more about my mother because I embody her. A lot more. She's in the way I move. She's in the way I do things. I mean, there's one way to iron a shirt, and no one can gainsay that. You know, the way your mother taught you to iron a shirt is the only way to do it. Or the way I put cutlery in the drawer. Every time I put cutlery in the cutlery drawer, I remember my mother because she showed me a way of quickly doing it. and it's little things like that that bring her to mind all the time. Whereas my father was much more of an intellectual relationship, and so when I'm thinking about things, he tends to come to mind. And Megan helped me to. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this insight. Now that I've got it, it always takes time. But I just wanted to raise this just to show when the importance of coaching is it's not that the coach has sort of superior knowledge. It's just that as they get to know you, they see things that you don't see. Yeah, I mean it's there. What I've just said is actually. Somewhere in this story, I touched on it, but it was only really when discussing it with Megan that it came out and became something that I'm now able to think about. So I might be able to write more about my mother now that I've got a handle on it, as it were. I just wonder, there's two things really. One is that was an insight about coaching and whether that rings any bells for you, but also whether that idea of maybe we embody one or both of our parents in various ways and whether that's something that makes any sense to you.
Would you like to share first, Melissa?
Sure. So yeah, it actually does. I know for myself in my coaching, and also just how I relate to my audience on social media. And I also create courses, by the way. When I create my courses, a big part of when I'm talking is actually storytelling. So for me, it's telling my own story or maybe stories of other people I know and then relating it. Because I like to relate to my clients since I'm helping them with something that I've been through. I think it's helpful to come from a place of like and still going through, really, because healing is a lifelong process. So I'm really connecting with them through a place of understanding. This is what's worked for me, and this is what I've been through, as opposed to, well, I just know this, so therefore I know it's right. Kind of like what you mentioned, Chris, where you're just helping them uncover something that maybe they didn't see in themselves because you have that different perspective, you know, from the outside looking in. So yeah, I love telling stories in that way. And also, I think analogies are really great. I can't think of any specific ones right now, but I have the mind of a poet. I love writing poetry. So I think analogies can illustrate a point really well.
I think that the way that coaching supports us in seeing things that we didn't see before is the main goal, really, of coaching. Because if you can see things in a different way, then you can do things in a different way. But if you can't see it differently, then there's no place to start to be able to do something different, because there's a kind of block in the sense of knowing how to go about it. So yeah, and definitely, I mean, we had a conversation about this. I heard a bit about what you just said, Chris, the other day, and about embodying different parts of your parents and how they affected you in different ways. And I found it just really fascinating how you were saying about, and just that awareness as well, knowing how your father was more intellectual and then your mother was more doing things, and just to have that awareness of how the different energies play out in terms of how they express themselves through you. I found that really interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is it time for me to tell my... Yeah. So basically, Chris asked me to talk about how words and music tell a story and how they go together, which comes first, and how do I make music tell a story. So I thought of a song where it starts off in a minor key, and I wrote the music first, and then during the chorus it goes into a major key, and then it goes back to a minor key again and plays the same riff as the beginning. But there is a lyrical shift in the sense that the lyrics become more positive, whereas at the beginning, so basically it tells the story of my songwriting journey, where I've written lots and lots of songs for many, many years, and still have only released a couple. A few, more than a couple, but a few. And it's been a very frustrating and emotional, I would say, there's a kind of sacredness when it comes to songwriting, because you're putting your feet, if you do it properly, not necessarily, I mean, you can write a song and it can be, you know, a general process of, okay, I'm going to write a song about this. And I'm not saying that's not sacred. It's just, it's a different way of songwriting. So you can write a song and it's just, you know, a general song, and it's for something specific, maybe. And it doesn't have a lot of emotional weight to it, if that makes sense. So I was speaking to a guy who I'm working in a studio with at the moment. And he's written some an album for some films, and then he also wrote another some other music, and that also ended up in a film. But because he didn't write specifically it was more of an emotional the one that got picked for a film was his, had more of an emotional weight to it, if that makes sense, because the ones he wrote more specifically mm-hmm. to send off for the companies, they were just songs that he's a very talented musician, so obviously they were very good songs, but there's something about when, as a songwriter, you're writing for yourself first, and then it becomes for others, if that makes sense. So coming back to how the music goes, tells a story. Yes, just to explain a little bit about major and minor, for those that don't know. So minor is when it's sad, and major is when it's happy in terms of emotional tone. So I particularly love minor chords because when we feel sad, a lot of the time we're not allowed to feel sad. And one of the things about music is it invites you to feel whatever it is. And it's a total acceptance of emotion, all range. So with rock music, you can feel angry, for example, and it's okay. And with a lot of my music, I tend to write in minor chords and major chords. I can't speak. Major chords. And with this song, it goes from minor to major for a reason. So I didn't do it consciously. It wasn't a conscious thing of, right, I'm going to, because I don't write like, well, I do write consciously, but I go into the subconscious mind to write. I tap into source and I channel. So with this song, I just listened for what it was going to be. And it was minor chords at first because it was a sad topic that I was still healing from. And then the major part of it, it says, and now you know that every song, oh, sorry, I'll talk first about the minor part. So just to go over it, if I've not before, is that it's about my songwriting process. So that I've written a lot of songs for a lot of years, and I found it difficult to get to the place where these songs were out there. And I'm still working on it. I'm still moving through. And I actually have a few songs out now with videos, and I've been singing a lot live, much more than I used to. So I'm really proud of myself for that journey. And yeah, it's been a very interesting journey emotionally, and I wanted to write about it so that if anyone else felt the same way as I did, that they could relate. And the major part of the song is saying about the spiritual aspect of songs, saying that every song lives in you, every track, even if the courage you did lack, you sang for you, you sang for me, and you really felt it, you really felt that passion. And it's just saying that everything that's meaningful lasts, even if it's not seen by anyone. It's something that contributes to the healing of the world. And that was really important for me to know, because I felt so guilty and incapable and stupid and just, you know, why are these songs not out there? I must have done something wrong. And the message was, I've not done anything, quote unquote, wrong. It's just about changing perspective so that they can be released, so that they can be heard, so that more people are hearing it. It's not about beating yourself up for what you haven't done. It's about accepting what is and what can be. So yeah, that's basically, oh no, sorry. And then it goes back into minor again, but the lyrics are positive. So it's this interesting thing where you get the same melody as before, but there's a positive aspect to it. So it's still minor, there's still sadness, but there's a positive lyrics to it. And that goes, every single melody, it lives forever. It reverberates throughout the universe. Nothing ever dies. Not when it's alive. So, yeah, that's a little bit about, I don't know if you can actually hear my piano if I play it. So if you can't, then don't have to include this bit, but you definitely can't hear it when I've not turned it up. So it just goes a little bit like... So that's the minor bit, and then the major bit goes. Every track, even if the courage you did lack, you sang for you, you sang for me, and you really felt it, you really felt that passion. And then it goes back into the... Every single melody. I'm not going to play it all because just you might not be able to hear it, but it's that's very, very tiny bit of it. Probably didn't sound that great, but yeah, just that's how I write songs, and the difference between how you can create a story through melody and music, and then a story through lyrics. Is that, yeah?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love how at the end you said it went back into kind of the sadder melody, but with happy lyrics. I love how that symbolizes, like, when you're healing, you still have that sadness, but you can also feel like joy and happiness at the same
time. Chris, does that answer your question?
Can't remember what the question was. yeah, I thought you put it really well. I think it's fascinating because we've done some work on poetry in the past, and there's a similar thing going on in poetry, and the emotion isn't always in the just in the meaning of the words. It's also in the way that you read it. You know, you bring something to the words, as it were. I've told Gemma a story the other day, and it might be worth just repeating because I think it sort of clarifies it. My goddaughter's kid brother, who is now an adult, learned to play the clarinet. And I heard him, I don't know how long he'd been practicing, but he was pretty good. And he was playing a tune called the Skyboat Song, which you might know. It's quite a well-known Scottish folk melody. How's it go? Da 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 da, over the sea to sky. Da 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 da. Anyway, you either know it or you don't. He played it, and every note. Absolutely perfect, because he's that sort of person. So I said to him, read the lyrics. Just, read them to yourself. And then play the same tune with the lyrics in mind. So he did that. And this just happened in a few minutes. It wasn't, it wasn't that he disappeared for 3 days or anything. Just a few minutes. And... it could have been a completely different tune. It was absolutely beautiful. It was just bringing the lyrics and the which is a particular meaning. I mean, you could put different lyrics to the same tune, and it might come out very differently. But the interaction of the two is, and it's also, I suppose, there's three things. There's the music, there's the lyrics, and then there's you, the performer. or performers who all contribute something.
Gemma, I also relate so much to your story about, number one, your process of how you write, because I write a lot of poetry. And same way, it just like, you're like tapping in and then it just comes to you. For me, it's like images kind of with emotion. And then I describe what they look and feel like. But it's, I can totally relate to that. And also your idea of how once you create it, it always exists. I totally believe that too. You're like putting it out into the universe, even if you never share it. But it's so beautiful to also share it. So thank you for doing that today.
I just thought it's quite a necessary kind of healing for a lot of creatives who maybe feel like they haven't done enough. And I think it's that letting go of this burden and just thinking, you know, no, this creation exactly. in itself is something really special in itself, if that makes sense. It becomes its own entity in a yes. way and lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And there's no judging it. I can really relate to your story too, in terms of, you know, wanting to put things out there. I know when I was younger, I wrote a lot of poetry and I was putting together a poetry book. And I actually started this in 2010. And when I completed it, I was going to self-publish it. I taught myself how to self-publish. I created an ISBN. I had the cover done. And then I would send it to myself and I would read it and I would go, no, 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 that's all wrong. And I would just be like, I have to start over. I literally started over multiple times. I changed all the fonts. I decided I had to paint pictures to go with the poems. I mean, I just changed it and changed it. Mm-hmm. And then I finally just felt defeated, like, well, it's just not good enough. And now, this was years ago, I realized it's just poetry. That is the expression of my deepest self, my emotions, the things I went through that people could relate to. And there's no perfection in art. And so I really had to come to a place, once again, of loving myself and accepting myself for who I am to put it out there. And so I do Yay. Plan on releasing my poetry book next year as well.
Okay. What happens next?
We are asking Melissa how people can contact you.
Yes.
How can they contact you?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So, yeah, if you want to follow me on Facebook, I'm most active on Facebook. You can go into the search and type at Envisioned Life Institute. Or you could also go into the search and type at Melissa Marie Watson 1. You can also find me on Instagram at Envision Life Institute. And you can also go to my website, envisionlifeinstitute.com or melissamariewatson.com. And I'd love to give you guys the links. I have two new courses that I launched. I launched one about 6 weeks ago, and then the other one I launched. It's actually launching right now in pre-sales, and it comes out May 1st. So I would definitely love to give you guys those links too, if anyone's interested. And I have a free self-care resource guide that I can give you the link to if any of the listeners want access to that. It just talks a little bit about my self-care course. And like I think I mentioned earlier, I kind of look at self-care from a different perspective in terms of, are you aligned with your higher self and your higher purpose? And also using self-care to heal from your own trauma. And so this kind of summarizes some of the main points. And then there's like a daily habit tracker. And there's also some journal healing prompts within that free resource.
We'll put all the links in the show notes so people listening can go straight from the listen to the podcast to whatever they're interested in. Gemma, have you got anything new to share?
Well, I'm going to be doing a live performance soon. I don't know when this podcast will come out, but that will be in May. So if you basically follow my Instagram, my Facebook, Gemma Rosenthal, and Creative Hearts as well. I have two different pages on both Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. And then I'm on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and also LinkedIn and Twitter. Although I don't use those as much. So Sorry. So, yes, and also I just wanted to mention that I have a Facebook group called Awakening Voices. So, Melissa, if you want to share anything on there that you have coming up, you're welcome to use that page as well to get your message out there. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, I would love to do that.
Chris, yes. Tell us where.
And, as always, I run Telling Stories, Making Business, twice a month. A business person tells a story and other business people offer feedback. And we've been meeting on Zoom ever since the lockdown. And once you get on Zoom, you can't get off it. So that's where I am. I've also just starting up some new blog posts. So I've got three streams in mind. One of them has just started, and that one's about some of the theory behind using stories in business, and how they can help with business development and with marketing. The second one is going to be the 21 stories I worked on, as I mentioned earlier, about books. And then the third one will be about problem clarification. So I'm not into solving problems, because a lot of problems are not soluble. You know, like you're saying, you're healing all your life, and a lot of problems are around, well, beyond just one life, so many lifetimes, some of them. But getting clear about what the problem actually is an important step, both in business for sales and so on, but just generally if you're trying to achieve something of value. So there'll be quite a lot of blog posts on that theme when I've written them, which is the hard bit. So yes, and so all those details will be in the show notes, and all that remains is to thank Melissa for being a guest, and thank Gemma for being my long-suffering co-host, and to say goodbye.
I don't know why I'm waving. Bye bye.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been a great guest. Thank you.
Yes.